The following is a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's gncast.com.
And welcome to the Alien Invasion number 201, a Galactic Network podcast. I'm Dave Nelson, along with Brad Ludwig and Anessa Muyens. Whoop whoop.
And I'm Stephen King, and I'm a little girl.
Yes. Thanks to Monkey Warhol for providing our intro music. It's a song called Alien Syndrome, and you can find it at soundcloud.com/monkeywarhol. This is the show where we talk about beings from elsewhere in the universe and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, and real life. What is real life? My question for y'all is, what about Earth do you think would be attractive to aliens? Why do you think they would want to visit or invade?
Water parks. Yeah.
Schlitterbahn.
Who doesn't like a good water park?
Heads up, Texas. Aliens are coming for the hottest, coolest time in Texas.
Wisconsin Dells, water park capital of the world.
Hello. Schlitterbahn.
Mm-hmm. I see your Schlitterbahn and raise you a Noah's Ark. Suck it.
Well, we're just lucky we have water to have a water park in Texas. I'm sorry. They're just lucky to have a water park in, I don't know.
You've been transplanted, Moines.
It's a weird alien body snatcher thing going on. I don't know. But I'm going with Dave tonight, so.
Yeah. I'm going with Stephen King, who is right. Still a little girl.
Hi, that, Stephen.
That's from The Dead Alewives, which was it Bringing Down the Grandmaster? It's a improv comedy group that Rob Schraub of lots of things. Was it Monster House? Scud the Disposable Assassin? Twigger's Holiday. He directed a number of the Sarah Silverman Show episodes. Hmm. Yeah, check it out.
All right, will do. So I suppose I should answer. Does Dave get an answer? Dave would answer Happy Little Trees.
Yes. He's pulling the Bob Ross.
He's going with the Happy Little Trees. Because why wouldn't aliens appreciate the Happy Little Trees? They produce oxygen, and they're pretty, and they're green, and they change colors, and yeah.
What if they don't breathe oxygen?
Well, that's a shame.
Fair enough.
They'll go for the sad decomposing trees. Aww. Yeah. Womp, womp.
In the news.
Artists and conspiracy theorists will get equal enjoyment out of the Ancient Aliens coloring book. So if you need some relaxation time and you're tired of coloring happy little trees and flowers and sunshine or whatever, you can now find a coloring book with an Ancient Aliens theme. The History Channel show that launched 1,000 memes, Ancient Aliens, is coming soon to a bookshelf near you. Getting simultaneous November 15th releases are an official companion book as well as an adult coloring book. We've got an advanced look at three of the outlines drawn by artist Kathleen Edwards. I was looking at these and they were very, well, one of them was very Aztec or Mayan, I suppose, tribal. Tribal is the term. So anyway, the coloring books contains 40 detailed drawings of objects, places, and phenomena that will be quite familiar to fans of Ancient Aliens. The drawings we've posted here reference Roswell crop circles, aliens, the golden flyer figurines of Tolima, Colombia, aliens, and Mayan artwork found in King Pakal's tomb, definitely aliens, according to the book's official description. Introducing viewers to the mysterious ancient relics and wondrous archaeological sites, the show explores the fascinating unanswered questions about the origins of our civilizations and the possibility of extraterrestrial influence on our cultures and development. The perfect accompaniment to Ancient Aliens, registered trademark, the official companion book. This authorized coloring book includes intricately detailed illustrations of more than 36 iconic monuments and objects tied to the ancient astronaut theory, from the Great Pyramid of Giza to Mayan artifacts eerily similar to modern astronauts. Completists and anyone who already owns the entire Time Life Mysteries of the Unknown series will also want to pick up Ancient Aliens, the official companion book. Filled with an exciting and behind-the-scenes stories from the show's creators and leading experts in ancient alien theory, the book explores the key questions at the heart of the series. Who were they? Why did they come? What did they leave behind? Where did they go? Will they ever return? Whether or not you believe, it's still intriguing stuff, even if the mystery of Giorgio Tsoukalos' hair will never be solved. And this comes from Gizmodo.com or IO9 or whatever it is now. Gizmodo owns IO9. Is that right?
I
think so.
Yes. They do now.
They're together now. So yeah, that's where I got it from.
They're making sweet, sweet babies.
They're making sweet, sweet babies and coloring ancient aliens by each page, by the day. So yeah. But like I said, some of the artwork and they mentioned is kind of a tribal theme. So very Mayan, and just some weird shapes and whatnot. There were a couple that I didn't really get the alien thing, but maybe once you start coloring, you get more of an alien idea, but it looks like it would be fun if you're into coloring books.
Something to break it up. There's all sorts of different coloring books for adults now. So,
oh yeah,
why not Ancient Aliens?
I mean, they've got Harry Potter, Doctor Who, Sugar Skulls. Who knows?
Goat spiders, Chupra-billy.
Chinchillas. I don't know.
Chinchillas.
So,
they sound like something for your face.
I do. My chin is cold. Let me go get my chinchilla.
Damn right.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Network on all the major social networks or click on the icons at gncast.com.
If aliens call, does humanity have a plan?
Run. Scream. Arms flailing.
Well, that's just what you should do anyway. Okay. This is from livescience.com. And this is a very long article, so I trimmed it up quite a bit. So here we go. The science fiction movie Arrival, which opened in theaters last weekend, poses tantalizing questions about how humans might make contact and eventually communicate with intelligent aliens. The much-hyped film has renewed people's interest in the search for intelligent life elsewhere in the universe, but what would happen if humans really did make contact with an intelligent alien civilization? If ET calls, is there a plan? The answer is yes and no, said astronomer Seth Shostak, who leads efforts to detect radio signals from extraterrestrial civilizations at the SETI Institute in Mountain View, California. There are some protocols, but I think that's an unfortunate name, and it makes it sound more important than they are, Shostak told Live Science. In the 1990s, Shostak chaired a committee of the International Academy of Astronautics and prepared a revised version of the post-detection protocols for researchers who watch for possible alien transmissions using radio telescopes. a field known as SETI, short for the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. The protocols were first drawn up in the 1980s to help scientists in the United States and the Soviet Union share information about any potential SETI signals. But, Shostak explained, the SETI post-detection protocols are guidelines for governments and scientists rather than a global action plan for dealing with alien contact. They say, if you pick up a signal, check it out, tell everybody, and don't broadcast any replies without international consultation, whatever that means, he said. But that's all that the protocols say, and they have no force of law. The United Nations took a copy of the early protocols and put them in a file drawer somewhere, and that's as official as they ever got. Although the aliens in arrival helpfully traveled to Earth in faster-than-light spaceships, willing and ready to talk, Shostak said a more likely first contact scenario would be the detection of a SETI radio signal, perhaps from a source hundreds of thousands of light years away. That means it could take centuries for the aliens to receive any reply transmitted from Earth in an effort to communicate with them, he said. As such, there might not be any real hurry to decide what to say. They got some time. Shostak pointed out that humans have already been broadcasting news into space for decades in the form of television and radio signals, and so it's probably too late to keep quiet. Those signals have been going out into space since the Second World War, so we've already told them we're here, he said. Now, like I said, I really sliced this up, so you can check out the article in the show notes. It's livescience.com. The Science of Arrival. If aliens call, does humanity have a plan?
Sounds interesting. I wonder, yeah, we are past the point of no return on that one if we've been broadcasting since the Second World War.
The intergalactic cat is out of said bag.
Yep.
We are a beacon in space. Of course, it's going to take a while for, well, World War II. So 60, 76 years. Well, you know, okay, so let's say 75 years that signals have been traveling out into space. It's going to be like another couple of centuries before it would hit anywhere. Of course, they wouldn't, it would all be garbled mess, but it would still be. They'd still be able to detect, you know, radio transmission.
Indeed.
So, yeah, we'll see what we see.
Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop.
If you like what you've heard on this Galactic Network podcast, please consider helping us out financially by going to gncast.com/support. On that page, you'll find links to our Patreon campaign where you can make a small recurring monthly pledge of as little as $1. Or click on our Amazon affiliate link, make a purchase, and we get a very small percentage from the sale. Again, go to gncast.com/support. And thank you for supporting the Galactic Network podcast.
Four things that we want to see in the Starship Troopers reboot. Andrew Liptak at The Verge writes, according to The Hollywood Reporter, a reboot is in the works with the idea that it'll be the star of a new franchise. This is the perfect opportunity for there to be a straight-up adaptation of the 1959 Robert Heinlein novel that would do the story justice. At its best, the original film is a brilliant satire on fascist propaganda, skewering the self-importance of science fiction cinema. At its worst, it's a shitty adaptation of one of science fiction's best-known works. So here's what Liptak would like to see in the remake, and maybe the rest of us would too. A straight-up adaptation of the film would be ideal. Starship Troopers the movie and Starship Troopers the book share only some superficial similarities. Characters, some plot points, and not much else. Structurally, the novel did some interesting things, flashing back and forth between points in Rico's life, which allowed readers to really get the points that Heinlein was trying to make on a personal level. Adapting the film would be like photocopying a photocopy. Fortunately, according to The Wrap, this project is going to back the original novel for source material, so maybe we can be a bit optimistic about this one. Don't shy away from the politics. The original Starship Troopers was a deeply political novel. Robert Heinlein used it as a test bed for some of his more libertarian ideas, such as trading public service for citizenship, personal responsibility, and the role of military in society. There's been a deeply political science fiction. There's been a lot of deeply political science fiction stories since the original came out. Just look at District 9 and its take on refugees, Battlestar Galactica's grappling with the Iraq War, while The Expanse has its own take on economic disparities. The various experiences that the U.S. has had with the war in the last decade and a half give plenty of ammunition for storytellers to use when it comes to putting the story together. There's a lot to say about perpetual war, what a citizen owes one's country, and so forth. Make it a war film. There are plenty of military science fiction films out there, but there aren't very many that actually examine warfare. Sure, you've got space marines and aliens and vast armies going after one another in Star Wars, but they're always sort of incidental to the plot. There's a couple of highlights. Battle LA was quite a lot of fun to watch, as was The Edge of Tomorrow. I want to see Black Hawk Down in space. An intense film that looks at the future of warfare and what it might entail, not just for the spectacle that military sci-fi offers, but for some of the questions that Heinlein was probing at, without offering up something that's overly pro-fascist or unflinchingly pro-military. And where's my goddamn power armor? Finally, let's talk about the most important issue at hand, power armor. The film took away one of the best parts of Starship Troopers. It outfitted its soldiers with what looked like the 1990s imagined the future of body armor and sent them out running around. The novel popularized an enduring staple of military science fiction, power armor. Any new film bearing the title Starship Troopers must have power armor. This shouldn't be too hard to do. Power armor is just about everywhere in science fiction these days. Films and games like Halo, Elysium, District 9, Iron Man, and The Edge of Tomorrow each had their own depictions of the technology. CGI makes it far more practical to film this, whereas it was a bit more of a stretch in 1997. The original Starship Troopers contained an epic level of camp, which makes it fun to watch every now and again, but the so bad it's great mark is nearly impossible to hit deliberately. This new Starship Troopers could go a number of ways, but if it has any hope of having any sort of longevity, relevance, or even entertainment value, it shouldn't just try and distance itself from the original film. It has to. And that comes from TheVerge.com.
Now, our friend Rob Benton absolutely loves Heinlein and loves the book. But he thought the movie was crap because it really cut out a lot of the important stuff from the book now. So I know that he would be definitely one to see like a more true to form.
Yeah, a more accurate representation. I really enjoyed the 1997 flick, but it is very like cheesy in parts. And I know it's not like the book aside from a few things, but it was still a fun movie to watch.
You look at Verhoeven's work, and a lot of what he did was to, you look at RoboCop, you look at Starship Troopers, Total Recall, and you get through like news and advertisements a good overall snapshot of what the world is like. And I think that when you see, like in Starship Troopers especially, the news reporters talking to the soldiers and whatnot, you get a feeling of him kind of poking fun and keeping true to the whole propaganda portion. And, you know, Rico's whole we gotta go kill some aliens when he's
because I'm a citizen. Yeah. It's what citizens do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, he definitely used that as the kind of the sounding board for, you know, the propaganda portion of the whole some of the themes in the book. So I think that he was true to that, but a lot of that was kind of some of the cheese as well. So I guess if you read the book and enjoy the themes and some of the bits that were transposed into the movie, you know, I guess
you'd kinda...
you might not necessarily want to see it remade because it's, you know, there's the purists who love an exact translation from the book. And then there's the purists who may not have read the book, seen the movie and say, well, why are you going to remake that? That was actually, you know, for the time it was pretty good. So I don't know.
I think at this point you'd probably want to disconnect yourself from the 1997 movie and the book. Cause they are essentially they're two different entities, even though they have a few things in common. Ultimately, they are very different. And the same could be said about a lot of shows and movies that are based on books. They ultimately end up being two different beings in their own right. So, but no, I would be interested to see the reboot of the movie. I don't know that you would really call it a reboot. I would like to see the film adaptation of Starship Troopers, the 2000s style, I suppose.
No, very true.
So, yeah. Remember, power armor. Want it.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Hi. Hello. Making a promo is hard. Hey, this is Brad Ludwig from the Adventure Party Podcast. Every Sunday, we talk about board games, card games, role-playing games, reindeer games. Co-host, friend, game designer, and gaming store manager Glenn Bittner reviews a game each week and recommends something to add to your library or game closet setup thing. Our Kickstarter spotlight shines on a game you should back with your hard-earned cash. We've picked successfully backed projects about 95% of the time. I really thought that airport board game from Russia was gonna fly. I'll shot that percentage right in the We also chat with people who work in the game industry, or we pick an important topic that deals with some aspect of gaming. We welcome you to the Adventure Party.
Adventure Party is part of the Galactic Network. You can find us at gncasts.com.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape. Huge. Just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
And now it's time for sightings. All right. In 1957, a flying saucer supposedly landed at Edwards Air Force Base, which was allegedly caught on film and was reported by Gordon Cooper, a test pilot and astronaut. He was at Edwards supervising the installation of a new precision landing system at the time. And for folks that don't know, I don't believe it mentions, but Edwards Air Force Base is out in Southern California. All right, so according to Gordo, love the name, I had a camera crew filming the installation when they spotted a saucer. They filmed it as it flew overhead, then hovered, extended three legs as landing gear, and slowly came down to land on a dry lake bed. These guys were all pro cameramen, so the picture quality was very good. The camera crew managed to get within 20 or 30 yards of it, filming all the time. It was a classic saucer, shiny, silver, and smooth, about 30 feet across. It was pretty clear it was an alien craft. As they approached closer, it took off. Stinky UFO. The camera crew reported the incident to Cooper and turned over the film. Cooper says that he reported the incident to his superiors and was told to develop the film and sent it to Washington, which he did after watching it and finding it to be exactly as described. He says that after that, the film vanished and didn't come to light even when the Air Force began Project Blue Book. He suggested using it as evidence and was told that it had been lost, not that it would have mattered much. According to Cooper, Blue Book was strictly a cover-up anyway. Wild. At least they didn't say it didn't exist. They weren't like, what pictures?
Well, as I recall, it kind of hovered, no pun intended, it hovered between actual research and trying to gather information. And then at a certain point, it fell under different leadership. And then it was more smokescreen-ish. And then I don't know if it was something before it became Blue Book. The interwebs!
I don't know how to look for it. Project Blue Book before Blue Book? I should know this.
It was, okay, it started out as Project Sign in 1947, Grudge in 1949, and then it became Project Blue Book in 1952.
Sign and Grudge later became movie titles.
It's true.
Wild. Not saying that it's aliens, but it's aliens. Womp, womp.
Womp, womp.
If you would like to chat with the hosts or other listeners of this Galactic Network podcast 24 hours a day, go to gncast.com/signup. We'll add you to our Slack team, so you'll have the ability to interact with us in real time. Again, go to gncast.com/signup.
So up next, picks and warnings. All right. So my pick for this week is Arias. It is a short film that I found on Amazon Prime, and it says it's a half hour, but it's really like 15 minutes in length with 15 minutes of behind-the-scenes footage. The behind-the-scenes footage would have been a lot more interesting if there was some sort of commentary, but yeah, I ended up just kind of skipping ahead, and then I only maybe saw a minute or two of the 15 minutes of behind-the-scenes footage. So anyway, The production of this short film, I believe, was done by a high school. It looks very much like a high school production, but it's actually pretty good for a high school production. Hmm. The story is about this girl who's trying to find evidence of UFOs. So she's trying to track down various UFO sightings and whatnot. And she finally encounters a UFO sighting, and this individual kind of like pops up in front of her, and the UFO, like at the same time, the UFO disappears out of sight. And she comes to, and you start to learn a bit more about who the aliens are, why they're here, that sort of thing. I don't want to give too much away, but I thought it was really interesting because it's basically, okay, spoiler alert, if you don't want to know what the whole twist is with this, you can skip ahead like 2 minutes. So, the city of Atlantis disappears, right? Like, people keep talking about how there was a city of Atlantis, nobody can find it, they have ideas on where it is. Apparently, the city of Atlantis had technology advanced enough to send the city out into space, and they went and they civilized other places, and now they've come back to Earth, and I'm just gonna leave that at that.
Dun dun dun
dun dun dun. Yeah, no. If you've got 15 minutes of time and have Amazon Prime, I recommend giving it a watch. It's probably on the YouTubes or Vimeo. Look for it there too. Arias.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
The big to-do on the CW is the upcoming Heroes vs. Aliens crossover from the four shows Supergirl, Arrow, Flash, and Legends of Tomorrow. And now we have gotten a peek at the aliens that they are going to be fighting. And the interesting thing about these aliens is that, and I think we mentioned it a little bit on the last episode when we talked about this, is that the particular aliens... Oh, now the alien race escapes my memory! The Dominators. Okay. Whew. So the interesting thing about the Dominators, in the comics, they look kind of goofy. They're like all teeth in the front. And they've got kind of huge yellow heads. And the alien race, you find out later on, they have a design on their forehead. And depending on the caste or standing of the particular dominator, they have a different design. The majority of the dominators that we get to see in the original Invasion comic series in DC, they have a red circle, a very large red circle on their very large foreheads. Their whole shtick is to come to Earth and try to take over. And they end up doing a lot of interesting things and actually releasing another metagene bomb, which in the Flash universe, it's like the event that creates these metahumans. But and maybe they'll do something with this in the crossover, where they'll release some kind of agent that will create more metahumans. We're kind of seeing some of that with Alchemy and using his Philosopher's Stone to convert people who, in the Flashpoint event, who had abilities and give them abilities that they had in this other timeline. So, I don't know. We'll have to see how everything shakes out. But now we get a good look at their interpretation of what these dominators look like in the TV crossover. Obviously, the teaser trailer is not very long, but you get a very good idea of what's at stake, what's going on, and a little bit of a look. The main one that we've seen is the Supergirl kind of point of view. So she's learning the names of all the different heroes. She's met Barry Allen before, but now she's going to be meeting all the other superheroes in the Arrowverse. So I'm really looking forward to this and seeing how everything shakes out. That is my pick. It's the Supergirl Heroes versus Aliens trailer. And it was Dave's pick too. So I'm riding on his coattails. So there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm Dave Nelson and I approve of this review.
Oh yeah, that's right. We have to give the flying number of flying saucers. It's hard for me to be objective because I'm such a comic book nerd, but I'm going to give it 4 flying saucers.
I concur. Our picks for this week, a short film called Arias and Supergirl Heroes versus Aliens trailer.
And you'll get to see all that stuff in the show notes.
If you would like to chat with the hosts or other listeners of this Galactic Network podcast 24 hours a day, go to gncast.com/signup. We'll add you to our Slack team, so you'll have the ability to interact with us in real time. Again, go to gncast.com/signup.
Final thoughts?
Our cat is meowing very loudly outside of our Nerdatorium studio door.
Spoiler alert, he's inside the room.
Is he?
He is. Oh, he's been asleep in like the closet the whole time.
Furlock Holmes, our wonderful black cat. Oh, there you are, buddy. Hi. Next on Cat Talk.
Irene Catler.
Yes.
And her short staccato.
And now everybody knows that we like talking about aliens and cats.
Which cats are totally aliens. Just saying. See, I made it relevant.
Boom.
All right. So that's going to do it for this edition of the Alien Invasion, a Galactic Network podcast. We'd like to thank Wetvard von Dornberg, a composer from Germany, for providing our new closing music called Be Water. Learn more about him and his music at thecaravel.net. Thanks for joining us, and have a great week.
What is she doing now? And there's our cat again. Talk to you later.
Goodbye!
Bye!
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's gncast.com.